This is Holly Herndon.
I'm Matt Dryhurst.
And you're listening to... to this, you're listening to the free version. This podcast is completely ad-free and only possible through listener support. That sounds like a standard line, but it's true. It takes time and care to put this together, and without patrons, we won't be able to carve out the time to do this. So if you enjoy this podcast and would like to see it continue, please visit patreon.com/interdependence and subscribe, where you'll get access to our most recent conversations, as well as an archive of full-length past episodes. Thank you for listening. Bring, bring, bring. Hi, Andy and Emma.
Hi.
Hey, Holly.
Matt's here too.
I'm here too. Hi.
How's it going?
Really good. Yeah, we're speaking to you on a cold evening in London.
That sounds lovely. And
it's a spooky evening because it's Halloween.
Yeah, if we get interrupted throughout the interview, it will be kids banging on the window for sweets. So,
how do people do that in London?
Yeah. It's quite a big thing here.
There's some Wiccan Genesis story there somewhere.
There's probably, yeah, Hallows Eve or something. Yeah, there's probably All Hallows Eve, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you want Halloween to be a bit cold because otherwise you'd be too sweaty in your costume. Okay. All the makeup and the kind of like layers that you'd need, it's probably a good thing. I actually forgot it was Halloween. That's how like detached we are from the world at this point in time. I just I'm like, yeah, it is actually Halloween.
Just wait till you have a kid and they demand a costume.
Oh my God.
That was me like two nights before and I'm like, Mom, I need the perfect costume. I need you to sew all night for my class tomorrow.
So will you be doing anything for Halloween other than joining us for this podcast?
No, this is our spooky event for the evening, so for that.
Okay, well, awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. And I guess for those who maybe aren't familiar with you, would you mind giving a brief introduction to yourselves?
Yeah, sure. My name's Andy. I'm in a band called Plaid, and I've been making electronic music for 32 years, since the late 80s. In various guises, the earliest of which was the Black Dog. But I've been with Ed working under the name Plaid now for 30 odd years.
Wow. And I'm Emma. I'm an audiovisual artist and animation director specializing in AI at the moment.
There's a nice intersection, of course, with your bringing up the Black Dog and your bringing up, Emma, this emphasis on AI. I was talking to someone earlier about, you know, the OG kind of like artificial intelligence series. It feels kind of appropriate.
We should say what
that is. Well, actually, Andy, you're going to know more about this than I do. Would you mind saying what that is?
The artificial intelligence series were compilation albums brought out by Warp in 93, I think the first one in 93, and they sort of collated some of the more adventurous electronic music of the time, I suppose is the best way of putting it, and I'm not entirely sure why it was called the AI series. I really don't know. I mean, perhaps it's insulting because we actually had music on them, so I don't know if we're artificially intelligent as far as they're concerned.
Was it a buzzword at the time, or do you like, was this like a hip thing to say, or yeah, where did that come from?
Yeah, I don't know. Cause I mean, we've discussed this a lot. I think back then AI meant what is now AGI. And mm-hmm. So a lot of us oldsters who are seeing AI mentioned all the time, I kind of get a bit confused, but I think back then AI, I think their series was more, it was about the inception of an AGI, you know, what some people call the singularity,
right,
where a non-organic machine becomes sentient.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people associate AI. That's why I often don't use AI, because a lot of people think of that, you know, because it's historically been used. We often use ML, machine
like
learning.
Deep learning.
Yeah, that's more accurate. Yeah, it's just a popularity thing. I suppose people like knocking it around.
Well, that's something, and it's also one of these things that, like, if you use the term ML or deep learning, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. So, like, end up being, like, forced into saying AI, even though technically it's, like, an embattled term, because you're just, like, no one has a clue. You're, like...
You're like, aggregate human intelligence. And it's exactly. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I sort of cringe when I sign things off as AI at the moment. But, like you say, I kind of use that term because it's widely recognized, and to kind of go into, animating with notebooks and code is like kind of a lot for people to take in at the moment. So yeah, it gets generalized, I think.
Cat incident again. Sorry, I'll deal with that.
It's very Halloween fitting. It sounded like this. Screaming being in the background. I was like, this is.
Just got this little sound effects machine. We'll do some squeaky horns and stuff.
The clown car.
And of course, the we do want to talk about a little bit. Of course, we're going to deviate as much as possible, but the advent or the catalyst for starting this conversation is, of course, there is a record coming out that you've both been working on, and I'm really curious to learn a little bit more about that. I won't even try to butcher the title, so I'm just going to leave that to you all.
Okay, it's quite a wild story, and so I'm glad you asked. So the album is called Fjorm for Lorks, and it's basically a collection of music we wrote when we recently travelled to the planet for Lorks to play the Fjorm Festival. And amazing as that sounds, but we had, towards the end of it's kind of like the last lockdown, and we were all just like desperate for some kind of escapism. And just at that time, the space agency got in contact and told us about this festival that we could play, and gave us a spaceship. And so we went there and did that. And the album is basically, we've recreated the music back in Earth Studios because it was kind of difficult to record up there. And
you get converted into beings of light.
Yeah, there's no physical form on Forlorks.
Recording is rather difficult.
And so in addition to that amazing experience, we got back and we started to see these kind of this new stuff that's been dubbed AI art. In probably October 2020-ish.
No, 20. It was last year, wasn't it?
21. Excuse me. Yeah. So last year, obviously, Clip was out in April 21-ish, and I guess it took a few months, and then we started to see some things, and it was exactly what we'd experienced on For Lorks, and so luckily Emma became an expert and was able to recreate what we've seen.
That's wonderful. It reminds me of, like, there was that genre of kind of annoying tweets during the lockdown where someone would be like, Stacey wrote a book and directed her first feature film during the pandemic. What did you do? travel. So that's like, that's quite a...
I'm on my ninth studio album this year. What? I haven't finished my second one. It's taken 4 years. What did you do? Like super productivity, like, going on in lockdown. I'm just sitting sort of staring at the news and having slightly weird disorientated dinners,
But I do quite like this framing of lockdown as being like a transmission or like a kind of interdimensional experience of everybody. I kind of want to pursue this further, but I don't really know where to start.
I guess for us it was just like an unbelievable experience, and we kind of felt like a lot of people were in need of a bit of escapism after the previous few years. And so, we recreated the music for other people too.
And the planet and the environment, and sort of fittingly to have gone so deep into space, it seems right that we found For Lorks in the latent space.
Yeah.
Is that what's depicted on the cover?
Yeah, the cover. I mean, it's been as I guess you guys know, it's been the technology is so evolving so rapidly that in the early stages. So the album sleeve artwork was completed about 8 months ago, and at that stage, I guess we were getting some kind of fairly sort of hazy or through sort of smoke kind of visions of the Phylloxians. And then as things have gone on down the line, and Em's been doing a graphic novel about our trip too, things have come into a bit more, into focus with the help of the new tools that have become available.
Yes, keeping up with the technology at the moment has been absolutely insane. Like as Andy said, when I first started to create the album cover, we'd just gotten diffusion models released, and it was very exciting. You know, having coming out of the VQGAN moment, which I adore VQGAN, I think it's got this beautiful ethereal quality. Then disco came into play, and disco diffusion, and we are trying to incorporate that. And then as the project unfolded, Dali was released, and I think you guys are on the artist program with Dali too. Mm-hmm. And so I got access to that kind of before anybody else. And at that point, we weren't allowed to use it commercially. So I was just kind of messing around with it. But then, of course, they announced that you could. So it's like, well, now I need to incorporate this technology in. And then they announced outpainting. So we used outpainting. And then stable diffusion came along. So it's like keeping this project sort of totally up to date. It's been quite a challenge because it's moving so quickly, and you can do something new, like probably tomorrow, that we couldn't do yesterday. So yeah, it's been incredibly challenging keeping it fresh, but also so exciting. Every time something new happens, it's like, oh wow, we can do this with it now. We can do that. We can put ourselves in the picture. We can train models. Like, my gosh, my mind's blown,
Yeah, that definitely resonates, the lightning speed at which new kind of like collabs are released and new abilities are kind of unlocked. It's completely out of sync with the music industry, that's always been my biggest frustration with music, is the insane timeline of like, oh no, we need this for a press campaign 6 months in advance. And I'm like, but my ideas have changed by
totally.
And now with the tech changing so quickly, it's like, come on, we got to figure out a much faster system here.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating, and it's getting worse and worse because, there's such high demand for the vinyl press advance these days. So yeah, well, it's not a year, but two thirds of a year, basically you have to have everything nailed. And as and yeah, you feel like it'd kind of be nice to put something out a bit fresher sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
We just have the right stuff that will last more than 8 months.
Totally. That's the thing. It's like these two competing speeds. Right, where you're like, we're in the one habit where, with the record industry, for as wonderful as it is still kind of tied in some senses to like the analog, the analog speed. And then, yeah, it is also funny too, because like amongst like a particular crop of artists, it's like following exactly the latest model drop seems to have like displaced following. It kind of like has primacy over following the art, even, mm-hmm. where you're just like, it's just this constant, is a melodrama that you can just kind of like participate with. Mm-hmm. I wonder as well. So the name of this planet, and of course, what you're describing from your experience, at least, is that you're naming this after a planet that you visited. But I do, the first thing I saw when I thought the title is, I'm like, that looks like a word that would have just ended up being randomly generated in one of these spawned images. For example, I don't know if you followed the actually future podcast guest, the Loeb drama.
Oh, Loeb. Loeb story. Yeah, I was talking to her about this the other day, actually. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Well, totally, but it feels like a generated word.
Funnily enough, it's not.
we're not going to say why. But fjorm is an old English word, actually, that I assume they named the festival after it, or the old English word came.
Yeah, on investigating, it means like feast and festival and sort of a celebration. You come together for a fjorm, a very, very ancient word.
And sometimes a forest, I think, as well. It's got some links to forest as well.
It was a forest festival.
It's that kind of, certainly had that kind of vibe.
It seems fitting to talk about it on this pagan evening.
Yeah.
What was the kind of interplay with these tours? I mean, what was the genesis of this?
On the musical side or on the...
Let's start with the musical side. Let's do that.
On the musical side, I think, like, no, well, it sounds naff to say it, but you're kind of, I guess you, as a writer, you're trying to make yourself feel something, you know, in the loosest possible terms. You know, you write to make yourself feel happy, or maybe to take a little bit of the edge off your happiness sometimes, and, you know, make yourself feel a bit scared or something. I think because of the period it was written over, we had a strong desire to make something that made us feel happier. And I think that's come through in the music. And, you know, in a way, we were looking forward and backwards simultaneously. We were thinking about, you know, like our earliest sort of loves in music, which was sort of the electro scene and bands like Drexia, who I'm pretty sure went to space. And then looking back to some of the 70s or the late 60s, early 70s period with sort of Funkadelic and Parliament, and these, there were people going to space then. And I guess maybe because we were thinking about it, we got an invite too.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, it's not like, it's not trying to be the most experimental electronic music album ever, as anyone who will listen to it will agree. But it's more a kind of look back at music that's influenced us. We tried to use modern tools to create the music. So it's a sort of, forward and backwards at the same time was our direction. And
with the art, well, there's your Bytes project, which you can
the first album we did for Warp in 93 was under the banner Black Dog Productions, and it was called Bytes, and it was basically the three of us who were the Black Dog, wrote under various pseudonyms. There's a couple of plaid tracks on there. And we were thinking about that a lot with the artworking for this, because in a way it's got a kind of glitchy. It was the image on the front cover was generated with a package called Vista, with a kind of on an Amiga 1200, I think, back then. But it was kind of this very early landscape generative software. And we just sort of saw some parallels to where we were at then with the technology, and kind of where we're at now, which I think in both cases was at the foot of a very rapidly climbing hill. Mm. And, you know, that sort of excitement of, oh my God, what's coming next? You know, text to video, you know, text to music, you know, I mean, there's just going to be some crazy stuff to explore.
And with Bytes as well, you were nostalgic when we were discussing this to me, because you were saying, like, the watching renders, you know, render in AI, and I mean, we know it's really fast, and you were saying your Bytes album took like
Spanners. Oh, so the subsequent album Spanners, Ed and I had gotten into a package called 3D Studio a bit, and so we made the front cover, which was a Cerberus, a three-headed dog on a spanner. And then Ed made an Egyptian god for the back cover. Anyway, as Em says, you know, back then we had to render to get the quality for the cover image, we had to render out both sides in 9 sections, And each one of those sections took 20 hours to render.
Yeah, wow.
So like the one cover is like 80. I can't, my maths is not good. Anyway, a hell of a long time. And then obviously you render it out, you notice one of the dog's shoulder is sticking out of its back, because at that point you weren't able to kind of click together models like you can now. And yeah, it's just
no out painting
definitely not.
No, yeah. Out painting. And you were saying, like, with one of them, and you'd rendered it for hours and hours, and then a tree just randomly popped up in the sky.
Oh, that
and
was with Bites. Yeah,
that's so sort of reminiscent of first working with these AI tools, you know, and how random that things can be, and before you kind of have a grasp of the semantics and how to speak to them individually, you know, the strangest things will happen. I'm like, I had a little squirrel person just wouldn't. When I was speaking to Super Composite about at Loab, I was like, you know, I had this squirrel. It's my Loab, if you will. it just kept appearing at the beginning of this kind of quite beatific, natural-looking, pretty render I was doing. There's this weird squirrel creature. Or asking for fly agaric mushrooms, but the AI not really getting that fly agaric are two separate words, you know. Mm-hmm. So ended up with these kind of pizzas flying through a forest at one point, which was, has its own charm, but it wasn't quite what I was after.
I mean, I guess the thing is, like, you know, even though these projects are like 30 years apart, like the thing that we like most is kind of the bits where the algorithm or the package isn't doing quite what it's supposed to be, and it does something out of the blue. And that's the thing that's exciting. You know, it's not recreating what's already been. It's like that occasionally these things,
it chucks up something completely new and different, and you're like, wow, you know, I can't honestly say if I would have come to think of that myself. And I think that's, it's so exciting. And then you learn, you know, how to work with it and go, okay, I'm going to use this to my advantage then. let's use this weird little squirrel fella. What's he going to do next?
It's really interesting to hear such a long kind of time. Like, yeah, you've been dealing with these different systems over such a long time period, and to hear, you know, how the rendering time and the difficulty and how things become easier, but also complicated and more things are possible. And that's, you know, obviously also applicable to music technology. You know, you said you've been making music since the electronic music since the late 80s. I wonder if there's like any kind of observation that you have from so many years of seeing the kind of technology evolve and then artists practice within those different systems evolve. Like, as things become faster and easier, how does the relationship from between the artist and the work change, and also the artist and the audience? Like, have you noticed any dramatic changes there along the way as things become kind of faster and easier? I don't know if that.
Well, I think it's generally your peers who are the people you chat to about the technological side of it. I mean, right. there is, I mean, our audience isn't as nerdy as some acts on Warp, for example. But there's still a sort of element of that, or it will be people who are also writing music and are just sort of loosely interested. I think probably I'd go back to what I said before, that the one thing that remains the same rather is that what we're looking for is, we're kind of not looking to kind of break the tools, but we're looking for the kind of corners where a little bit of dust has got caught up, and maybe the people who invented the tools didn't quite intend you to spend as much time in that corner as you're going to, but then you just, you know, you're trying to find the unexplored bits. Yeah, I suppose. And that, so yeah, that hasn't really changed actually. And I'm not sure. I think artists have always been the same. Like, we get a bit obsessed with technology sometimes, maybe to the detriment of the music sometimes, I don't know, but it's about sort of exploring those dusty corners and finding interesting things that have been dropped from the devs' pockets as they've been.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'd say that's echoed in the way we've approached the projects artistically as well. For something so kind of tech heavy, it's felt incredibly organic at times, each piece of art has had this kind of symbiotic relationship with the next as it feeds in and develops and sort of makes the story stronger. And yeah, for a project like this, it feels surprisingly organic and natural. And I guess maybe some of that is down to the speed and stuff, because you're able to kind of really explore quite quickly and get ideas together, you know, a lot faster, especially with the animation and stuff, than we would have been able to in traditional routes. I mean, it's crazy fast. I mean, I always liken it to rotoscoping, which is, mm-hmm. Incredibly difficult and
labor intensive.
Yeah. And then we have these tools now that, you know, I can essentially rotoscope something in 20 seconds in 4 minutes or something. That's crazy. But it allows for this incredible exploration of so many different subjects and areas that, you know, might just are not possible with more traditional methods.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's something we've discussed before on here, is that there was a certain point. I mean, you mentioning the older 3D software, you know, if you go back like 6 or 7 years trying to manipulate some of these GANs to do something, and you have to wait, you know, exactly, you wait overnight to try and generate something that doesn't turn out as you like it, so then you run in again.
Yeah. Many moons ago in October 2021.
You've got to kind of earn your scars, but then it gets to a point of fluency and just where it just becomes fun, right? And I mean, I think that was the big, you know, the big kind of like clip guided moment just over a year ago or whatnot. All of a sudden now it became almost just, it kind of, we'd used the analogy before, almost kind of like, you know, jamming or something. Like, there was definitely a point, I guess, with electronic music tools where it went from being like printing and waiting, or like, you know, the kind of like tape music period of just having to do everything so manually, to getting to the point whereby you basically just have interfaces where you and other people, as was kind of like, you know, the story from like a lot of the early like Clip VQ GAN, the clip diffusion systems, you know, just discords of people just generating tons of stuff in conversation with each other. It all of a sudden became fun and kind of like a communicative medium, as opposed to this laborious process.
I mean, it's still laborious. It's just a different kind of laborious.
Well, now it's laborious to select things and to kind of try and distinguish yourself. I mean, I think that's
sorting through your thousands and thousands of generated images and trying to remember where you've put them all.
Yeah, we had a kind of similar feeling when, I guess, when Dali came out, and we had a couple of nights and we had, you know, friends around, and we were just generating whatever came off the top of someone's head and laughed so much.
Laughing,
and we were just going, oh my God, television is just dead now.
It's a new campfire story.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Literally tears streaming down your face laughing.
It's really the best times. Yeah.
And when people kind of get the hang of it, you know, I was talking about this earlier. It's so funny sometimes, you know, with these things, and you sit down and you're like, okay, so what do you want to see? And everybody's faces go blank. suddenly they can see, you know, you've given the opportunity, you can see anything that you want right now, you know, or possibly, maybe something like it, you know.
Yeah, and if you do have an answer, 90% of people go for, I want the Starry Night by Van Gogh in London.
The beach.
Yeah, we had that actually. We had to go to Austria recently, and we were on the train back working on something. And, you know, I've got like a server set up where I run things at home, but I can just log into it remotely. And there was a woman next to us on this like very long trip, and just over the course, she must have been in her 70s, mm-hmm. but over the course of the trip, she's just like,
Yeah, she was watching our
screen. What the fuck are you doing? Because you know, and you forget sometimes, because of course it's like the, it's incremental progress. Where and we're also so jaded now, because of course we're spoiled for these tools. But there was this woman who like clearly had no idea what was going on, but was just kind of watching us type and then watching us kind of mask and move this stuff around, and these things just materialize on my screen. But she kept like elbowing her husband, who was like very disinterested. And every time both of them are just kind of like on the screen, and I'm like, you forget sometimes as like a jaded cosmopolitan artist with a Twitter account, like quite how magical the stuff is if you aren't following it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not even just the sort of older generation. I just think the majority of the population hasn't really been exposed to this stuff at all. You know, if they're not particularly interested, there's a few articles starting to come out now in bigger publications, generally pretty badly informed, in my opinion. But I mean, I think the majority of the public haven't been exposed to this yet.
That's a lot of, you know, the articles, as I'm sure you guys know, you know, are quite got the sort of fearful element to it. And yeah. And I guess that's what, you know, that's what gets people clicking.
I guess that's the news.
Is AI art going to, going to kill all art in the industry? And it's like, oh, yeah, I'd like to read that. Not about how brilliant it is. And so I suppose that's a bit disheartening sometimes. And I guess, I don't know, we're in a bit of a bubble because we see so much of it.
Yeah.
And looking out and, you know, keeping the ear to the ground and, of course, you know, waiting for the next new hot notebook to drop. And but then you realise that so many people haven't seen anything like it. I mean, we showed Dali to my brother, didn't we, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he sat there sort of mouth agape.
Yeah, he's a professional photographer.
He's a cameraman, a director of photography. Yeah. So and he is like, what? So what? Can anyone just use this? Like, it was funny actually, because I was like, no. But the next day they said, hey, we've opened it up to the public.
And I wonder there too. I mean, okay, so that's one thing that's refreshing here is obviously, you know, Andy, you're talking about having such a long engagement with electronic music. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm just being kind of, tailoring an argument for my own purposes. But, you know, so Holly and I, you're very deeply engaged in certain technical fields that we find super interesting. And it does feel that the general tone, for some legitimate reasons, and I think for some kind of miserable reasons, has kind of turned toward, you know, cynicism, you know, the whole tech lash, kind of like just general mistrust of anything that involves technology. And now, I wasn't very active in the 90s. I was active kicking a ball in a garden. But the impression I get in retrospect, and I think one of the reasons why a lot of people look back upon that time with great, you know, kind of with great feeling, is that you just get this sense of like enthusiasm for, you know, the possibilities of things. And I don't know whether that's too binary a suggestion, but do you think that's fair? I mean, I use, for example, just to qualify it more, right? Like, we've been very involved in, for a better version, I mean, we keep basically just walking into culture wars. I don't know how this happens, but we were very involved in the whole crypto thing. We've been involved in the crypto thing since before anyone cared, you know? And looking at, for example, the music ecosystem, music publications and the way in which it was received or just not cared about at all, versus I went back, like I have a Wire magazine subscription and went back to like the 90s, like looking for, you know, and there were like whole sections of the publication dedicated to this CD-ROM that dropped and like, oh, look at this cool new thing that they did. You know, they were like,
oh, but there's not a lot of mention of the internet in Wire.
That's true. There wasn't as much as you would have expected. Yeah. It's no, but that's the thing. I just wonder, you know, like I don't have that context. And I'm always really curious to people who were so involved at that point to understand, you know, was everything always so kind of dreary?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Yes, and we've looked back, and obviously there was huge controversy when the first typewriter was made. There was huge controversy about photography.
Huge controversy when Bob Dylan went on stage with an electric guitar for the first time.
Just people. It's basically fear and ignorance. And so if you don't know about something, but you know enough about it to know that it can do something, then you're going to imagine it a bad thing that it's going to do, and it never, well, I mean, I say it never pans out. I mean, obviously technologies do change, and some in certain fields you've got to kind of keep up with technology a bit to be relevant, and so some people perhaps will lose some work, but new jobs will be created and also I think the thing that people haven't fully understand, because I don't think we're quite there with AI, using that horrible term, generated music, yet, although there's some really interesting stuff happening. Give it some time. But with the AI art thing, it's never going to replace an illustrator, because, you know, you can say to Dali, hey, generate me a squirrel eating so-and-so, you know, sugar candy or whatever. And, you know, the client will go, brilliant, yes, that's our squirrel. Right, give us it in these different situations, and it can't do that at the moment. And you're screwed, because it can make very brilliant stuff, and I guess at the moment with the music thing, it can make a brilliant instance of music, but animation and with music, time is involved. So coherence from what happened in the previous moment to what happens in the next moment is really important. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, we're not quite there, although there are some extremely clever people making headway with all of that. But no, you know, nobody's going to lose their job immediately.
Yeah, and it doesn't just suddenly decide to create a picture or a piece of music on its own.
Yet.
so, you know, there's an element of the human that is the director in this case that is absolutely necessary. You know, in order to get what you want, it takes you, the human, interacting with the machine in order to generate anything close to what you want for your output. It takes lots of error. And I'm just, when you're just saying as well, I'm just trying to think of sort of a positive example in like the movies where AI is represented as a positive force. I think, you know,
iRobot a little,
but not for one.
No, in general, like as a species, we're more attuned to being worried about stuff, because that's important for our safety. We're not so, you know, we love good stuff too, but
yeah,
I guess we're not using our maximum ability just to focus on the good times, which is unfortunate. I'm trying to redress that myself.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, like we said before, these things don't get the clicks in the same way.
The doom clicks.
I was listening to an interesting podcast earlier where two economists were kind of having this conversation, and they were talking about it in kind of contrasting in a Western and an Eastern perspective towards like techno-optimism or techno-pessimism. And they were saying that China's kind of in the Star Trek phase that the US and the UK were in maybe in like the 90s. And now we've moved into the Black Mirror phase. And they were tying it to how technology has had a direct impact on people's lives. And so right now, because of, you know, the last several decades in China, technological progress has also brought a higher standard of living. Yeah. And that was kind of happening in the West as well for a while. And then we kind of hit a wall.
We're in our decadent phase.
Well, it's where technology is having, you know, actually making people's lives worse in many cases. Like social media is making people really depressed, or you know, there's a lot of negative kind of externalities around a lot of this stuff, even though there are so many things to be hopeful about. But I thought that was a really interesting framing of like we're in the post Star Trek phase.
Yeah, I love it. That's a really good descriptor.
Yeah.
Well, or potentially the pre Star Trek phase, if you chose to be optimistic about it, which is actually like closer to the narrative that a lot of the people I prefer in the ML AI space you know, just pushing this narrative of abundance, of being like, well, actually, why limit or conceive of these tools that can allow us to do remarkable things as anything but producing just surplus for people, right?
Yeah. Like,
in actuality, nobody's hurt. Sorry, we're just ranting this. Please
listen. No, absolutely. Well, we could bang on all day about that. I mean, I think overall, like people like Steven Pinker and stuff will point to the fact that people's lives are getting better, even if we perceptually think they're getting worse. Mm-hmm. Although in this particular, in the UK, I believe we have just hit a point where the quality of life has just literally started to go down. But that's perhaps for wider reasons than technology that we shouldn't get into on this podcast. But in general, there's a move forward. Everything gets better. But I suppose one of the problems in the West is the disparity issue, because we're all told we can make it, we can be successful as this person, but the reality isn't the case. You've got in general, unless you're super bright, you start out with a huge amount of seed money and then things get better because you invest wisely.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't take yourself from the ground up to being, you know, whoever X is in my mind at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I read a thing a while back, on why certain political parties stay in power, and it's because people are aspirational and they sort of, you know, the kind of feeding on people's hopes and dreams that they know are not going to really be fulfilled. And that's, yeah.
And you've got the old institutions, organizations pushing back against this more decentralized kind of way of looking at things, which of course on paper just looks so much better. But, you know, when you're fighting kind of, the banks of certain countries and the vested interests of huge corporations, it's quite difficult. To make the change. I mean, they'll obviously wait till they get a handle on the technology and make the change for us, and then it won't be as good. But it's a weird situation. I'm happy I'm just a musician, really, because traveling intergalactically making music's pretty much all I can deal with at the moment.
And it feeds back nicely, actually, because there's been an element in this project where it's been like, well, you know what, we can say what we want, you know.
Yeah,
because,
right?
Because basically,
stop the count.
Yeah,
stop the count, we've won.
Yeah. Fake news.
You can say whatever you like now. Our leaders have told us that.
Yeah.
And so why not do that in a creative way that, like,
that's it. Politicians come out blatantly saying something isn't true, you know, saying something and it isn't true in the morning, and by the end of the day they've retracted it.
It's our job to be the creatives. They're supposed to be the fact people, you know. Boring fact people.
But yeah, in this world where it seems like you can make up anything that you want, you know, well, okay,
why not?
Let's join in then.
Yeah, no, it's true. Actually, we were talking about this yesterday a little bit, that if there were reason to have caution about some of these tools, it's that, you know, I'm just operating under the assumption that in the next 4 to 5 years, you can imagine generating anything to a fidelity level that is believable, right? And there's people talk about deep fakes and so on and so forth, which is like, okay, I mean, deep fakes in some sense are kind of addressable, even though there is a challenge with it. You just need kind of verification systems that we're actually working on something in that realm. But the bigger danger is less kind of like willfully deceiving people and more just what happens when we already kind of have these different competing realities going on, when each of them becomes incredibly vivid, you know? So it's not about grand truth or someone, you know, someone lying and then deceiving somebody. It's more just about when everybody has the tools at their disposal to be able to go into a world of their own, you know, we don't really have the societal apparatus to deal with that. I mean, I don't think we even have the societal apparatus to deal with the state of that now. But most of that is kind of like,
you know, it's kind of ambient. It's not as real as you'd think, but it is very real, right? People's the filter bubble or whatnot is has this kind of big impact on people, but you just don't get to see it. But that only feels like it's going to increase, and that does feel like something we're not quite prepared for. You know, like,
well, I don't think we're very well equipped for it. I speak to my handler at OpenAI a little bit about this too, and she sort of repeatedly says one of the scariest things for her is that other people, like on Instagram, who say no way was this made by an AI, they just out and out don't believe it, and that so resonates with me as a fact, you know, that people need to be educated, that they need to know that the software is available, you know, that the how it can be used, because it's very dangerous to think that people couldn't even possibly conceive that the machines are able to do this at this point. That leads us into some very unsafe territory.
Yeah, and just to sort of expand that wider, I guess, a little bit, I mean, there's not enough people understand the home truth that every individual is creating their own reality as they go.
Yeah.
We're taught this perception that reality is one thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Completely. But that's not the reality. The reality is that our realities are guided by our experiences, by our, you know, our hate, our love, and we literally build those in our minds as we're going, and then we're supposed to kind of corral all of these people together.
Yeah.
Especially now when you've got bad actors who are introducing, and I agree with you, it's not always necessarily that people go out of their way to lie. It's just that in their reality, it's this way. They're amplified, and other people believe them. And so, you know, it's we're back to worry again. It is a kind of worrying time. But then it's also a matter, as we say, about, you know, we will create the realities that we think are better for us. And hopefully those are spread a little bit through our works.
Yeah, and you know, things like I like to think maybe we're all contributing to some awareness via this podcast, via projects like our project, and you know, getting it out to a wider audience, and sort of just helping it, to coin your phrase, spawn into the world.
I love it when people use the word spawn. It's working.
Little gold star.
Best podcast of the week.
So, speaking of which, is that kind of a part of this project? Is that a part of building out this world? Or is there a, you know, is there a kind of, are you, I guess my question is, like, how far are you going in the world building of this planet? You know,
it's really, as Em said earlier, it's really evolved quite organically. It's coming from, to be a complete hippie, from a place of love and positivity. I guess we don't exactly know where it will end up, but I mean, we're certainly going to be taking it out live to a few people over the next year, I guess.
And I've been preparing a visual show for the live show, and hopefully, you know, hope to immerse people in the Philoxian experience, and that they can come with us for a bit.
Escape your problems for a
bit. And also that, you know, that generates a little conversation after the shows and stuff. People are like, wow, you know, how did you do that? And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, because we've done a few tester shows with them. We're actually starting the tour next month, but we did a few the last couple of shows. Em's been working with us, and she's had longer queues after the gigs than we've had. It's bloody annoying.
So as you all are building out the kind of sound world and the visual world, is there a kind of, you know, it doesn't even have to be like an explicitly public logic, but even like an internal logic where like, you're like, this is how this planet operates. This is the governance system. This is the,
we have started exploring that, obviously many, many long, long conversations.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, you know, it is a real planet. It really does exist now because we know
part of our lives for months.
Yeah, we've been like eat, drink, live, sleeping it, you know, and it's like, yeah, there's lots and lots of ins and outs that I'm sure, you know, people will never really get to know, but it makes it work as the whole thing. It's a whole well-formed idea at this point, and we kind of know, you know, if something was to happen, you give us a situation on floor, because I can probably tell you what would happen on the planet now, you know, whatever if that makes any sense.
we're building up a legend, I guess, in our own minds, hoping a few people will come along and join us.
Yeah.
So is this the music of the planet? Like, is this music you would hear on the, do they have radios there?
No, they don't. There's nothing physical on the planet. It's the conditions don't allow a sort of physical form. So it's more, I guess, we call them light beings. But you might say the sort of essence of an individual. And
it's a massively solar driven planet because it has two suns. So everything is kind of really solar, and also it's a 24-hour festival.
It's a 24-hour festival. We've got no idea how long it's been running, but it's an infinite festival. It's constantly glowing. It represents all musical interests, not just electronic music. We just formed part of it, and in the graphic novel, you get to see it and the scale of it, and it's
quite
wild.
An epic planet. Yeah, I mean, you think navigating Glastonbury is bad, but
so is there a vector of this project that has infinite music that is kind of like beaming in the never ending sound of the planet? Planned?
Oh, excuse me. Actually, I didn't fully answer your previous question, and so it's not really the sound of the planet. This album, it basically, we were invited to play, and so we tried to represent what we do and our influences in the set, and so, you know, this is kind of the resulting collection of musics.
Was it received well there?
What's that?
Was it received well there?
Oh my God, yeah.
It was
insane.
It was the
best festival I've ever played. I thoroughly recommend it if you get an invite. I don't know how long we've got the spaceship. I'm figuring we're not going to have it too much longer. So if you get the opportunity, Holly, I would take it up.
Yeah, everybody was on their feet or their tentacles dancing.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Of light.
Yeah.
I do love that component, though. I have like a very, oddly enough, my dad was like the biggest Amon Dool fan. And so I
Before they split into Amon Dool 1 and Amon Dool 2.
Yeah, exactly. And Amon Dool 2.
Which one did he go with after the split?
2. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I grew up as like a metal kid too, so I kind of have this like very romantic association with kind of, you know, very idiosyncratic world building in records, which is something that I feel has always maybe been a stigma in like more kind of like urbane electronic music circles, even though there is of course a great example of it, and Drexia like kind of like right up there, but I have such a and it is wonderful to see because exactly like with these tools, ultimately you do have more and more capability to start building out kind of universes for people to traverse.
This is
part of that lineage, you know.
But since Drexia, you know, I mean, who traveled in space in the 90s and in the 2000s? I can't think of a single band, but you know, prior to the early 80s. You had, I mean, you know, people, Prince went, obviously. Yeah. You know, he was still, but he went earlier in his career, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, I, you know, why have we lost this imagination in,
well, in the creative like world? Some people like do game design that they do then kind of interactive audio for, like your David Kanigas of the world. They're true. Certainly kind of like world building.
Totally. Oh, that's cool.
I mean, you're right. But there was also, but I think, I mean, that's what I'm trying to get to is that I've always vehemently defended prog. And I feel like yeah. that is a line. That is absolutely. Like a line for a lot of people. And all my life
that's
it has been
anti-prog. I mean,
No, it's a thing. Yeah, prog is like is very much stigmatized. Really? It's very much considered. Yeah, I don't know why.
Oh no,
not with us.
Yeah, we grew up on it all. So yeah,
in the electronic sphere, yeah, rock in general was kind of no, because we can't have anything.
We both come from Hawkwind country, yeah, don't we?
We embrace all of the musics, you know, if it's got the right intention, it doesn't really matter which instrument it's played with. We're
bagpipes.
Bagpipes. Oh, I was at a wedding and I may have had too much to drink, but I did appreciate the bagpipes once. I genuinely thought it was
pass me the cat and I'll recreate some bagpipes.
Yeah, no, bagpipes are sick.
Well, speaking of like playing a cat as a bagpipe, I wonder if you've tried any of the kind of machine learning audio techniques, like the timbre transfer stuff or any kind of generative.
I see you have something out yourself along those lines as well. Yeah, there's some cool stuff. In fact, I did a little bit of research today and found a new Magenta plugin, DDSP to DST. Yeah. Oh, my God, that looks so fucking cool. Yeah. Excuse me, my language. I had something called Mouth that was doing a similar thing, but I had no idea that came out. I just kind of have been busy with other stuff.
So Hanoi, who put out Morph, who's a previous podcast guest, used to be at Magenta, and he co-published DDSP.
That's really interesting.
We actually helped with the real-time DDSP that Magenta just put out.
Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, no, that stuff is remarkable. I mean, yeah, you can do a great deal. I mean, and I'm actually, it's again on this kind of, you know, just the weird timelines here. I'm actually shocked that it hasn't been adopted more. To be honest, it is really a really impressive technique. But yeah, it just seems to have kind of fallen between the cracks.
Yeah, really strange because it looks like, where I'm personally quite interested about this is not recreating a model of a trumpet. I want to recreate a model of a new instrument. Yeah. And so, you know, that's where I intend to start mucking around with it. Ooh, and I'm sure
maybe we can create the instrument that's playing the sounds.
Yeah, we can do exactly. Yeah, I can definitely recommend. I mean, there's also, I don't know if you've seen any of the like unconditional generation stuff, like the Earcam's Rave models.
Right. No, I mean, I have the GRM tools and stuff, but the Earcam stuff's kind of expensive and I'm not affiliated kind of as an academic.
Oh, really? Earcam released a tool. It's also a Max, there's Max Objects, as far as I understand, where you can train on a corpus of material and just generate within that space. And there's also some timbre transfer features there. But for example, for exactly what you're talking about doing, about like making an odd instrument, you could probably do that already with the Rave tools.
Oh, wow. That sounds really, really exciting. Yeah. I'm going to check that out this evening later. That's really exciting.
Yeah, so I've messed around a little bit with Jukebox, but it's kind of noisy, isn't it?
I think the issue seems to be the resynthesis at the moment. I mean, it just doesn't sound. There's one thing I've heard, Moobert, which is like, we can't actually use it yet. So it's only like examples, but that sounds so crispy.
It's kind of fake.
Do you know it?
yeah. No, it's because I shouldn't say fake, but the.
Right. I figured it was fake though, because it sounds so crispy.
It's almost. It's more,
if it's not scratchy, there's something.
Yeah, exactly.
Happening.
Exactly. Trust the bad audio quality. Although not
so it's going to sound bad. At the moment,
this is so true. This is what I thought. I went on the demo site and I was thinking, I don't know.
I think what they're doing, which is not unclever, but like they're allowing you to prompt by basically indexing libraries of sounds that they have that they can then kind of sequence together in certain ways,
right?
Which is different from like raw, you know, synthesis of stuff, which is what Jukebox and Rave do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're definitely on the topic of defending things, though. I think the spectrally kind of neural synthesis sound it's just its own kind of thing. Where of course it does. I mean, like anything, kind of like the imagery too, right? You have to really filter and like find appropriate places to use it or whatever. But I feel like I've already heard like 44.1 generations that were almost like. It was almost kind of like the death of a romance, because I know, for example, like prompted music will be a thing in the next.
Well, it's the same with some of the imagery stuff. It's like, you know, some of the earlier notebooks, they had like a particular.
Well, you were saying with VQ Gun, exactly.
Weirdness.
Yeah.
And then like, as things become like really photorealistic, you kind of miss the freakiness.
Yeah, absolutely.
VQ Gun is still a user. You know, I mean, it might have been an early version, but I mean, oh my God, it's
oh yeah, beautiful. I don't think its time is gone, because you know, for certain things, it just creates this incredible ethereal look to it, and I do like it. I mean, the way you speak to VQ Gan is, you know, different, and I kind of.
And it's kind of getting a pipeline together.
Yeah.
You know, VQ Gan's great for setting things out, and then you want to, you know, enhance it with,
and it does these, you know, it can make these beautiful shapes and can really transform things, actually, in a way that I don't think I experience in quite the same way with the diffusion models. So
totally.
Yeah. You know, it's just so sort of otherworldly.
Totally. Yeah.
And I really like the kind of randomness of, you know, it's not photographically perfect, and it doesn't do things quite right. And I think there's something quite wonderful about that.
Yeah, exactly. With every release, it's like, you know, I've also had that feeling with StyleGAN, actually. Mm. I've had a few conversations with people recently where you're like, StyleGAN is actually pretty cool. And it kind of got overlooked. Because it's so narrow.
Totally.
It's a very narrow tool, but actually in terms of like getting very specific results, StyleGAN's actually incredibly powerful. So long as you don't want to like prompt through it, but each of these things will have their own romance associated with them, right? So you have to cherish them.
I love StyleGAN too. I think it's got again its own lovely sort of quality that's so otherly. You know, it's not trying to recreate human art, and I find that really interesting. I've got a folder full of little StyleGAN tests in there.
Totally.
They're all odd and strangely have the same little lady coming up. I don't think it's Loa, but she seems a little more friendly.
Loa's grandmother. Yeah.
Where did it all go wrong?
what are we missing? You are releasing this record. You are going to be touring it around about. Forgive me. I think the release is in a couple of weeks, right? It's in.
Yes, it's the 11th next month.
Exactly.
And we're actually doing our first show slightly before that on the 5th at London Print Works, and then we're around about the UK and over to Ireland in November. And then various other European stuff through December, January, over to America for a short run through end of January, early Feb. And then, more European dates. It will probably, hopefully, it will, you know, we'll be bringing out to people over the next year. I mean, normally it works like a year or maybe 18 months. And then we'll sit down and work out what the hell we're going to do with the next album, because it's going to be difficult to top this one. Hopefully the technology will be moving with us. We pray.
I've seen a lot of artists posting that they've needed to cancel tours for various reasons. I'm wondering if you also noticed a difference in trying to book this tour post COVID, if it was.
Yeah. I mean, well, in the UK, it's a difficult situation. We just went through this thing called Brexit, which means that everything's more difficult working with the EU. And yes, we have noticed less offers coming in. With America, we kind of go and lose money pretty much every time, but it's kind of cool to get out there, and we love traveling around and meeting the folks. And so we'll do that again this time. But yeah, things are getting more difficult. I mean, and also we've all got to start to think a bit more about traveling and whether it's worth flying four people over to a country just to play a show to, you know, a few hundred people. I don't know. Yeah, things are changing, but we will make it happen. Not quite sure we're ready for a metaverse gig yet, but I guess.
Wait, you can have legs now.
Legs? Shit.
What happened to that? There was a point in the beginning where I was kind of like belligerently tweeting once a week, like, what happened to all the metaverse shows?
Yeah.
It was just like a couple of week period where everyone was like, the future is disembodied performance. And I'm like, are you sure? Because I don't think, like, I feel like the meme just appears all the time and it seems to have died a death.
It's a great idea, but I guess in some way it's not bringing the love of the show, you know, if you just turn up, even if you turn up with legs, that might not be cool enough to
that might cool not enough vibe. Cut it. Also, didn't we have all this already in Second Life?
Yeah, you know? Right. Didn't that already happen 20 years ago? Yeah. Emma had a car on her head.
Yeah, I mean, they're trumpeting about, you know, having legs, and I distinctly remember walking into a club in Second Life and putting a car on my head. When metaverse can do that,
yeah, God, it's funny. Actually, one of the first things we ever worked on was a Second Life.
I know, that was ages ago.
we got invited to play a gig on Second Life. Yeah, it must have been 20 years ago or something.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
Was it attacked by a bunch of penises?
Well, that's it.
That was Matt's specialty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you might be
feeling you bring the penises.
Okay, yeah, you haven't been to Second Life if you haven't been to a genitalia shop.
Well, no, I have, irrespective of the difficulty, I have like such crazy FOMO for just generally touring. We like, you know, because we didn't get to talk about it very much, but COVID devastated us, to be honest. We were like halfway through a tour, you know, and
but we got to start a podcast.
Oh yeah, well, that's what part of it. But you know how it goes. It's like the record takes like a couple of years to put together, and then it's like the amount of work and time that went into it.
You're halfway through a tour.
Yeah,
that sucks.
But it's such a strange moment too, because it's kind of like there was the pandemic, and you know, we then started doing a lot of other stuff, and like a record didn't really come out of that process. There was like too much other stuff going on.
It's not like we didn't do anything though.
We just did a lot of stuff. But we're in this kind of odd position now. We're like,
hey, we're live, guys.
Say that again. Sorry,
my ninth studio album.
I just finished my 11th studio album. Oh, well,
no, but it's this odd circumstance where it's like you kind of don't want to go on tour with a record that came out in 2019.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Cool. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I miss it, you know, because it's kind of the point. I mean, that I don't know how you all feel about it, but like,
I'm speaking for both of us now. But
you can speak for yourself.
Well, for me, that was always kind of the point. It's just like you make the record so that you can go and play it in rooms for people. So like the
I think so. I mean, and the old school way apparently in the '70s was that you'd go and do your world tour or your shows, and then you record the album at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly.
In some way, I think maybe we should go back to that. You know, or at least gather orders for the physical copy of the release during the tour, and then, you know, you'd only print what's needed. You know, you don't, then that's surely environmentally better.
We did that a little bit for Proto. We did several shows where it was like the material was a work in progress because we were working with its ensemble, and it was so much better for that because we actually got to figure out what worked live.
Exactly, the album gets better as you play it, right?
I mean, that's exactly it. And you can hear it with those old records, right? Like you can hear records that were written on tour because by the time they get to the studio, like a classic example. There's, I forget the Japan record, but there's a Japan record that where the live album is way better than the recorded album for exactly that reason, because they'd actually gotten good at playing it.
Yeah.
And so all the same song.
Knew what it was.
Well, exactly. And it's like, this would be my one gripe with Eno, actually. I'm calling you out, Brian Eno, but like the whole, studio.
That's not your only gripe.
No, it's not my only gripe.
he's on our label now, so I have to.
Brian Eno's
actually stand up.
He's a legend.
Everybody knows Brian Eno's awesome, but that,
there's some gripes.
But that inversion of that, where it's kind of like, you know, and it was probably a gesture that was necessary at the time. So look, I'm not gonna throw shade, but like. But this idea of like, oh, you know, the studio is the instrument, whatnot, with the emphasis on like creating something there and then going and taking it. Yeah. I do feel like that imbalance kind of flipped.
But here's what it is. It was a stepping stone because the studio was the instrument. However, the studio has become compartmentalized or compacted to the laptop, which is now the instrument and the studio in one. So we can go back to the old way of... You know, playing studio live out in public.
Give it a name.
You couldn't take the whole studio to the public.
That's true, yeah.
But now
it's not his fault. It's not his
fault. Now you can. Yeah, he was just,
I'm so down with that. I mean, I come from a theatre background, and I know for a fact that, you know, plays get better the more they're performed.
For sure.
And like, by the time you do your last night, you know, like the last night is often like the best show of the whole thing, because everybody knows it so well, they're so comfortable, and a format for producing, I think, makes so much more natural sense.
Yeah, should make a comeback. Actually,
it
makes so much sense these days.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what you
maybe
do
that's
for the
way.
For the next.
I mean, I guess the
other way around.
You know, the fear like 20 years ago was, oh my god, someone's going to record it and share it on social media. But who gives a who cares? Because it just sounds terrible, and you would not have that in your audio collection.
Sort of doesn't, I think. We've gotten to the point now where the fear that was created from that, oh, it might be leaked, oh no, you know, sort of has gone away a bit, because like, no one's gonna like buy someone's
the music's either good or bad, and you know, if it leaks, then hopefully that's a bonus,
it's because people, it was good.
It's good. You know, and people want to hear it.
Yeah, totally. No, I do think like my long-term prediction is that a lot of music, due to a lot of economic factors, will have to go to the Broadway model, where it's like, if you actually want to hear the record, you'll end up having to buy a ticket.
Then you can
get some documentation of that, but that feels like it inevitably will kind of slide into that, because the economic conditions otherwise just don't work, you know?
And could help sort of break those sort of Spotify models, you know, where...
Exactly. Yeah. It's so sparse, and you're like, well, no, like, you know, rather than paying whatever, like a fraction of a cent to listen to a record, you'll actually have to buy a ticket. And I almost feel like, you know, some of the ways that obviously Kanye is kind of top of the heap and in the news at the moment for reasons we won't discuss, but like but I felt like he was almost kind of experimenting with that a little bit. It was kind of like, oh yeah, there's an album coming. You have to buy the ticket to go see it. And the album took like 6 months to come out later. And I'm like, actually, that feels very sensical to me. Well, look, it's been wonderful. We have a question we ask all guests at the end, and I'll invite Holly to ask.
Okay. What does interdependence mean to you?
Interdependence to me means that we're all connected. And we're all dependent on each other, for even though a lot of us don't realize it.
Yeah, I would echo that, and talk about our symbiotic relationships that we have with each other to create.
I should have asked what it meant on Forlorks.
Okay. What does it mean on is that how you say it?
Forlorks.
Forlorks.
Party together.
Oh man, you would have loved it there. I hope you guys get a chance to visit.
Well, look, we're gonna say goodbye, and it's been a great pleasure. I hope we get to say hello in person.
Yeah,
we'd love that.
We'd love that.
Thank you both. Best of luck with the tour, and thanks for putting together such a beautiful record. So, we'll see you next time, and bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for having us.